The funeral was something to plan for, something to do. You still got something to do. And yeah, once that had passed, I went into a really dark place.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
So this is the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. And I would like to introduce, it's Jordan Black. How are you, Jordan?
Very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Cracky name. Isn't that a movie with Brad Pitt? Jordan Black. Jordan Black.
I thought that was Jack
Joe
Black.
Black.
Oh, Joe Black. Black.
Oh, yeah. Joe Black. Yeah, Jack Black's the actor.
Jack Black's the actor.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Straight away, I just want to ask you how many tattoos you got, because they're coming straight out your neck from this.
Well, I'm looking at his Instagram at the moment. I can tell you now he's got a lot of tattoos.
Has he got more than you?
He's got more than me, yeah, yeah. I'm not allowed them on my neck.
I've been told.
You're on a ban. Don't ever come home with them on your neck.
That Portsmouth fan's got, like, everywhere, doesn't it? That bloke with the bell. You know, the one who rings the bell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember him.
And I believe he's got Portsmouth FC on his winky.
On his winky?
Has he got it shortened down, or has he got the whole word?
Yeah. It's quite a long word.
He's obviously packing. Yeah. No, he's only had it in font size 3.
I've always wondered about getting something to do with Aurora, like a picture of her, but I'm just terrified that I wouldn't want the pressure to be on somebody to get it.
That's
perfect.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
I was about to ask you, do you have any ink?
So of her name.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yes, it brings up both your hands together. Yeah.
Butterflies are signs when I feel like she's close. A lily.
Yeah.
A robin, a swallow.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything that you can see now.
Yeah.
Happened after she passed away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a kind of, I don't know whether you guys had it, but a kind of fuck it moment.
Well, yeah. You two got tattoos, haven't you?
Well, I had a handprint on my hand.
Yeah.
Because for me, that was like holding a hand every day.
Love that.
I had like a little angel wing on my finger, which was probably the most painful tattoo I think I've ever had in my life. That was horrible. But I, exactly the same as you with portrait, I wanted a portrait of Lily, and actually the tattooist that I usually use refused to do it. He said, well, I say refused, he just said, I can't do it. He said, I probably could do it, but I don't want to do it because I don't want the pressure and I don't want you to...
That's how I felt about it.
Especially because it's your own... I mean, I think with face... Do you remember, was it the statue of Ronaldo that got put outside? Honestly, it looked like it was half melted. He was not happy.
Yeah, he was horrendous.
You don't want that coming out.
I think it's okay when you have a child that is still here and they grow up, because then it's almost a laughing point, like, you know, look at that. You want to capture the beauty of
absolutely.
So to get into your story, and you've also alluded to it, and this will come back to a challenge that you're on here to talk about, as well as Aurora's story and your story with your family in Aurora, because you've got a military background then, isn't it? So, I mean, you can tell from the moment you walked in, and also by a quick glimpse at your Instagram, that you're in pretty good shape.
It's not always been that way.
Has it not?
No. So actually, when I was in the military, I would do physical activities. Because I had to. I never really enjoyed it. I was quite fit when I was in.
Beasting and all of that.
Yeah, getting a good beast in. I was also airborne, so I'd done the P Company, which is hardest course in...
Is that parachuting?
Yeah, so in the mainstream military, you have to do a really difficult course to get onto the parachute course. So right, I've done that.
Double hard bastards they are, mate, I tell you.
As you can tell by looking at me.
So obviously the reason that you are here, and thank you very much for taking the time, because you've had a bit of a drive to join us in the studio for this episode of the Still Parents podcast, is you have lost your child.
I have.
Your baby, Aurora.
Yeah.
And as we ask every guest, and it's completely up to you, in as much detail as you wish to give us, could you talk us through a bit of your background and how you... Well, we'll start with your relationship. So you and your other half.
Yes, my now wife, Kathleen.
Kathleen, okay.
She's from Coventry, so just down the road.
How long have you been together?
Coming up 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I also would like to say well done, because you've answered that question quicker than any other male guest that we've had on over the last 12 months.
But we've got to catch it. What's your wedding anniversary?
Yeah.
The 24th of August. Actually might be wrong.
I always say, you can say anything with enough conviction.
Yeah.
And people will believe
people
it.
People are just, you know,
we both missed it this year.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah. We've also got a newborn in the house now, so life is chaos.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And name you'll like, Ace Black. His name is.
Wow. Yeah.
Ace Jordan Black. So,
ah, nice.
Yeah, that's amazing.
He don't sleep, which is brilliant.
Oh, really?
That's why you go to the gym. That's why you go to the gym at 5 o'clock.
Oh, no. And you know what? It's quite nice to be able to say that without caveating it around other people that have lost children.
Yeah,
you feel almost like you can't moan about the hardships of bringing up children.
We've talked about this.
That's a great point, isn't it?
We've talked about this before, haven't we? Parents, you still have the room to be able to talk about it like that.
Yeah. Because you think, oh God, like, I have to tell him, oh, I'm so grateful, but he don't sleep.
Yeah, he don't sleep. Yeah.
No. Because life is still life, isn't it? These things are still happening. And although, yes, there's the, obviously I'm looking at this from an angle of someone who's not been through it, but you're grateful for life. But what's happened with tragedy in the past is still there. But it's still part of your everyday life, isn't it?
Him sleeping the way he does now would be hard if Aurora was still here too. So
yeah, exactly.
Why can you not moan one way or the other?
We were exactly the same. Yeah. We've been fortunate. We went on and had another three children.
Yeah.
We'd already got Alfie, who was three when we lost Lily. So we've now got four living children and obviously Lily that's not here. But the guilt you used to feel if you'd moan, I'm tired or I'm this, because that's what we wanted with Lily.
Of course.
But it's completely natural and completely normal that somebody would say, oh, they don't sleep or they don't do this or they don't do that, because you're parenting another child. It's not.
Yeah.
You say you used to feel. So when did that used to feel?
Yeah. Probably when.
Because you're 15, nearly 16 years in now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, nearly.
It'll be February, right? So it'll be next month.
I'm crap at maths. 16 years in February. I think when you just realise that actually this is normal parenting.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're tired. It doesn't matter if you moan about it, because you would do it anyway.
Yeah.
But it obviously originally you do have the guilt, but.
Did that also have that in like telling off your kids? Because obviously you've got to tell, especially when they've been really naughty.
Yeah, that's where I used to struggle with the teaching.
Right, okay.
Because I couldn't cope. Because I was a teacher, I was a PE teacher, I was head of year, and I was also deputy head of child protection.
You do actually give off PE teacher vibes, by the way. If I had to guess, it probably would have been in the top three.
that is fucking brilliant.
I love it.
Don't you fucking stop. But
what he's trying to say is you don't look like a proper teacher.
Yeah, but it's a pathetic education. I can say that now without going through a disciplinary.
It was my favourite subject, but carry on.
Yeah. So, but I had no time for the kids because I worked in quite a rough school in South Birmingham. It was, without characterising, it was in a really horrible area in the middle of three council estates. Kids actually preferred to be at school because they got noticed by the staff, what have you, rather than being at home with whatever was going on with the parents and stuff at home. But we also had a lot of challenging behaviour and I just hated it because for me, my daughter didn't get an opportunity in life and these kids were getting an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't cope with the fact that they were just either, you know, the poor behaviour or the way that they were wanted to grow up, or I just couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
Hated it.
One thing we've noticed a lot actually over the years that we've been doing this podcast now is the amount of dads who, after a loss, have had a career change. Mm. And it seems to have happened with multiple guests that we've had on this show. Excuse me. Sorry, what was your wife's name again?
Kath. Kathleen, but we call her Kath.
So you and Kath have been together for a while. And if you want to pick it up from there, tell us the story about how you came to get pregnant with Aurora. You don't need to go into too much graphic detail on that part.
It wouldn't take long.
I like him. I like him.
It's a man of two stroke joke. That's fine.
Two-stroke joke.
Is that
have to do a lot of work.
You can fall asleep quicker.
Is that what you're in Amy's phone as?
Probably, yeah. One-stroke joke for Amy.
And Matt and Ryan, with any questions, we'll jump in throughout your story. But over to you.
So Kath and I met 11-ish, coming up 11 years ago. At that time, I was in the military. We then, when I left in 2017, we moved to Dubai for 2 years on a little bit of a mad one. I wanted to grow my hair and get tattoos and travel the world and make my own decisions. And so we were headed for Australia, stopped in Dubai, ended up as a barber, just as a means to an end to allow us to stay there. Spent absolutely every penny that we had. and moved back to the UK with our tails between our legs, no car, straight back into her mum and dad's house.
Did you do the classic Dubai thing of just leaving your car at the airport and legging it?
No, no. I wish we did. We actually brought back a fair bit of debt and paid it off because we're that kind of weak-minded people. I wish we just left. Yeah. Well, I think we always thought that maybe we'd go back out there at least on holiday, yeah. And so yeah. We had the fear of, what if you get stopped and put in a Arab jail for X amount of time?
Interesting place. Whereabouts in Dubai did you live?
We lived in the Marina.
No way.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
I used to live in Qusais and now Barsha. I did, before that, you know, where the ski Dubai is.
Yeah. We lived literally on
Middle East friends.
Just because we're cultured, guys, come on.
Sand friends.
Did you build sandcastles together as well while you were there?
Sand's too hot to stand on. I've got a castle here.
Mate, yeah, I moved back to the UK in 2003. That's how long I've been back.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Jeez, we wouldn't have been much there then.
That's what I said we go back every now and again. It's like the whole new city's been built within the city.
I mean, we went back in March, having not been back since 2019 with the kids. And we're literally, even in that short amount of time, it's like, wow, there's a new thing in the sea, a new city.
The marina was getting built when I lived there. That's went barracuda fishing around where they were putting all the blocks of the palm in and stuff like that.
It is an amazing feat of
ingenuity.
You don't think they've done it right? Come on.
Go to bed at night, wake up and there's a skyscraper outside your window that weren't there 8 hours before. But sorry, we digress.
No, fine. So we moved back, tails between our legs, decided we needed to be adult about things. I think I was just turning 30.
Right.
How old
are you now?
I am 37.
Okay.
Yeah, so we came back and we fell pregnant. We were engaged. We had just purchased our first property, which was being built.
Yeah.
We were engaged and we were like, right, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Stupid, I don't know how it worked, but we're either going to move down to London or have a baby. Whichever happens, if you get a job in London first or we get pregnant first, that's what we do.
Right.
And she got pregnant first.
How did you feel about that?
Your outlook on life is let's just fucking do it.
I'm not like that now.
No, yeah.
I'm like, everything's a decision now. But yeah, we just thought, whichever happens first.
We
fell pregnant first. My wife and I are both slim, fit, healthy, neither of us smoke. Barely drink. So we're in a good position. We're engaged.
Yeah.
House we bought. The position you want to be in when you're full pregnant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything was absolutely fine. Pregnancy was fine. Aurora was growing perfectly. Everything was exactly how it should be. And it was really strange at first. And this was COVID times, by the way. So we found out in the April and March was lockdown. So it's a really strange period.
Yeah.
And the whole journey with Aurora was really strange because of that.
You're one of the COVID baby boomers.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, churning them out.
nothing else to do.
Literally. At 32 weeks, Kath had called me. I was at work. I was going into the office and she said to me, something doesn't feel right.
Mm.
And in hindsight and reflection, it's completely unrelated to what was wrong with Aurora. It was just mother's instinct, I believe. And so we went into the hospital that evening. We had the Doppler on. Everything was fine. Heartbeat was fine. We seemed pretty happy. And then she was called back in the next day for the routine scan. Decided not to go because we weren't assured, don't get me wrong, but we had been told what the result of the Doppler was fine. And she went in and they scanned and the sonographer had said, we found something on the baby's tummy. We're not exactly sure what it is, but it shouldn't be there. And then we were obviously referred to fetal medicine where they're able to do a much more in-depth scan. So this is all at, what do you call it, University Hospital?
Yeah, UHCW.
Yeah, so this is in Cov. So we've gone into the fetal well-being, had the scan, and the consultant there, again, reaffirmed what we had been told. There's something wrong with her stomach. We're not exactly sure what. At that point, we were discussing, is it a bowel perforation or a misforming of the bowel, and thinking about maybe there's going to be a stoma bag or bits and bobs like that. But they had said then, we would rather you be seen at Leicester Royal Infirmary because they've got a slightly better paediatric team. Yeah. Sonographers.
That's not far from Cov, is it?
No, and you know, we were like, okay, whatever's best. You know, we've got to do what we've got to do. And it was almost a case of, every time you went into the next appointment, there was a this or this. One was worse than the other. And every appointment we went into, it was the worst of the two. And, you know, we were getting called into the side rooms that are got flowers on the walls and stuff like that. And it's, we're a little bit like, okay, this is probably a bit more serious than perhaps a bowel preparation. And they decided then to induce us at 38 weeks just so that they were in control of the birth. They could have the right people in the room.
Did you say the original scan was 32 weeks when you...
So like, yeah, that's right. Okay. So Kath went in at 32 weeks right, and that's when we had found out that there was a complication of some description.
So those 6 weeks are quite... I mean, what were you going through mentally at that time?
So for me, I'm ever the optimist.
Yeah, you come across that way.
Yeah, and... Kath is the opposite, and I think that's why
opposites attract.
Yeah, I'm sure she won't mind me saying she.
When
we argue, I say you're so glass half full. That is kind of my thing.
Bet she loves that.
She absolutely hates it. Would you believe? She doesn't take the positive from it. Do you know what I mean? She doesn't flip it and say, "Well, it's half full." You know
no wonder you're running. Like, get you out of the house. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, I won't into a couple of boxing sessions.
That's why your speed's good. Yeah. Running away from her,
running fast as fuck out of the room. Well, like, you know,
you're welcome to hang out in here with us anytime you want.
Yeah.
When you chuck a comment out, you come down here.
Yeah.
Did that. The fact that she's glass half full and you're... No, have I got that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that she's glass half full.
Yeah.
Did that, in that 6 weeks, did that cause a rift at all between you?
No. You know what? We argue like cats and dogs and bicker at the moment like you would when you've got a newborn baby who doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
But for everything with Aurora, all the way through to the end, the funeral, the parts thereafter... Everything just worked in perfect harmony. And I actually hadn't really thought about how strong that is for our bond until you kind of sit down and go, Jesus Christ, we've been through the mill. And, you know, in those moments, the real hard moments, which I'll get onto, like we were just as one. There were some difficult times, which again, where there was an element of compromise from one or the other and towards the last days. But in general, and in those 6 weeks especially, I was just being... Because I honestly at that point didn't think it would end the way that it did.
Yeah.
I was so... I mean, modern medicine is amazing.
Yeah.
You can get a new heart. You can... There's almost nothing that they can't do.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm thinking, you know, she's born, we're healthy. She can't have anything that wrong with her that they can't fix it. Whatever it is can be fixed. And Kath used to sit in the bath actually and cry and she'd say, I'd feel like she's never going to come home. I'd be like, don't be so silly. Of course. And I think there's a whole, that mother's instinct and that kind of, that connection that mothers have with their children is really powerful.
You ground each other, don't you? So you kind of meet in the middle on that sensible option rather than being one being too high and one being too low.
Exactly that, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we got to the point where we were induced 38 plus two. We've got 3 children now in total, so my dates may be far off and gestations because all three of them have been brought early for one reason or another.
Oh, okay.
So she was brought into the world and it was quite bizarre. We were taken in the night before Kath was induced. Labour was actually pretty smooth.
Yeah.
Print went pretty well. It gives you a completely... different respect for women in general and obviously the woman that you love going through that in front of you and then the moment when they come and the elation and the kind of nothing in life ever having mattered before this point. That and you're just there and it's like this is the most incredible moment of my whole life and you don't know where your emotions lay with your wife. You're looking at her and she's exhausted and you're looking at the baby and all of the other stuff that was going on in the room, the consultants that were in there checking Aurora and stuff like that. But she come out to the eye absolutely perfect as in what I could see of her, which was only her face at that point.
Going into the labour, had you been told what to expect or potential outcomes? What was communication like with you?
They still were unsure.
Nothing.
We actually had one particular scan with an Egyptian fella over in Leicester, and he was the guy that you wanted to tell you if anyone was going to tell you that is probably a bit more serious than you think. And he had scanned and the tumour that was found was a vascular tumour. So it was essentially like a malformation of the arteries going through her body. And he had said the thing that was most concerning for him is that there's a hell of a lot of blood flow through this mass, which is what they described it at that point because they weren't sure what it was. And yeah, he said there's a lot of blood flow through there, which is making him really concerned. So although we didn't know what we would see when she was born or what to expect thereafter, we were obviously poised for something. And yeah, there was loads of consultants in the room. Yeah. Like I say, labor went smoothly. Aurora came in. We had a brief moment with her. Mm. And then she was taken away for, could have been 10 minutes, could have been an hour. Mm. It's kind of a blur. And then I followed her down to, literally she was an hour old maybe, she was down on the MRI scan to kind of get early images. She had an MRI scan and she had, she was then, what would you call that? What they do with the pregnant, I've got to think.
Ultrasound.
Right,
that's
there
what
he is.
I was thinking sonogram.
One point to Matt.
Yeah. I was thinking sonogram.
So she had an ultrasound, an MRI, and an X-ray all straight away to try and determine kind of any more in-depth images of what it is that was in her tummy. And nothing really came back. The most strange thing about that is it's COVID, right? So she was born.
Yeah.
We followed her down to the NICU. Oh, guys, we've got no room for you to stay.
I was about to ask, were you allowed in?
And this is at Leicester.
Yeah.
Leicester Royal.
And although they were really a really good hospital, we were only there for a week, but the time that was there, they were good.
That's where I was born.
Oh, was it? Yeah. So we were there for the day, and then we were like, well, can one of us stay? And they said, ward rules, no.
Yeah,
and we don't have anywhere in the hospital that you can stay either. So back down the M69, we've arrived back at her mum and dad's house because the house still isn't ready that we've purchased, and we're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Mother's instinct at that time is, where's my baby?
Yeah.
I want my baby because the hormones are going wild. And
Kath was at home expressing.
Yeah.
You know, and so obviously still at that point.
Back in Coventry and Aurora's in Leicester.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Ryan said. I mean, it's hard enough for you, but the new, the hormones, that must have been absolute torture
in the car
for her.
With the empty car seat. The car seat's been put in the car for the first time because we've been induced, so we know we're going. Everything's gone in the car. We've gone there. We didn't know for certain that she wouldn't be coming home that day.
Yeah.
You know, you're obviously thinking, well, maybe it's nothing kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've obviously gone home and it was just like, what the hell is going on here? Like, this is, I know Cass, mum and dad are absolutely brilliant, and my mum through this whole process, to be fair. And they were there supporting us in the moment. And it was like, all guns blazing, right, let's get ready for tomorrow. Let's get the Muslims washed. Let's get this ready. Let's get that ready. As soon as we were allowed to go and visit again, we're back in. And again, nothing really happened at Leicester. There was a little bit of difficulty putting, the tumour that she had was blocking the duodenum, which is the access out of the stomach. So she wasn't able to feed. So they had to put an IV line into her vein.
Right. Yep.
Bearing in mind, I should know how. I think she was like 4 pounds something. So she was tiny.
Yeah.
I don't remember being that small, but she was.
Yeah.
So they were trying to put the IV line in to be able to feed her and give her whatever she needed. And there was a lot of failed attempts at that, which was quite... Yeah. traumatic at that point, nothing compared to what followed in the other hospitals. But that's probably pretty much all that happened in Leicester. So we were there for a week. Obviously, we were back and forward, and I don't think we actually like got to hold her properly, or maybe for like a day or two. She had like a descended stomach. Her stomach looked very swollen.
Right.
But other than that, like, she was very, like, she just looked perfect.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was that kind of back and forth, and it was just the worry about how we're going to get everything we need to get into her and stuff. And as a result of all of the scans that she had, still clueless. So they said, we'd like to transfer you to Queen's Medical in Nottingham, which of the three hospitals that we went to was my favourite, which is how you can have a favourite hospital, I don't know, but it was. they let us stay in the within the hospital, up in the cancer ward. They've got rooms for the parents and stuff. So we were there. Do you know what I mean? We were mum and dad, and we were there on hand. And she was also in the critical care part of ICU, which meant she had almost pretty much one-on-one care. So really got to know the nurse that was looking after her, and they were absolutely brilliant. They were really... amazing. And what amazing people work in them places.
They are a different
different
type of how a nurse.
How they can go home, like obviously they've got children and stuff like that, how they're able to, and in
I think people are just born, they're meant to be for that role, aren't they? Because as you were just saying, if you've got children and you're going home after that,
you decompress. And you find a lot with the doctors and the consultants that they can be quite cold. And now, again, in hindsight, of course, that how could they live if they didn't have an element of like disassociation with the severity of the things that are going on? Because how could you live a life like that? You'd be...
Yeah.
So I get it now. Yeah. But in the moment, you're like, you're talking to
each other. Yeah, you're right.
But the nurses, on the other hand, they were absolutely amazing. So, so we went there and there were some really hard moments at that hospital. So the tumour wasn't necessarily getting bigger, but it was... It's funny how medical you become as well, isn't it? With whatever it is that's... So essentially, when blood is travelling through your body, it's carrying other things within it. And because her arteries and veins were so tightly wrapped within the tumour, stuff was seeping out of the veins, which was making her...
distend.
Really badly. Right. Okay. So her stomach was filling up with fluid, which was obviously leaning on her lungs and stuff like that. So
compounding the situation.
Yeah. It was then leaning on the liver, which is making more issues. So they fitted a central line, which was the first time that we had to authorize her to go to theater, which is a really insane and horrible thing to have to do, because they're signing to say she might not come back. She's tiny. They're trying to put this line in, which would make feeding her easier, and they were talking about chemo, so it would make administering chemo easier. So with signs, I decided that I would be the person to walk her up, and you're walking through the hospital and she's in the intensive care unit and people are looking at you and how small she is, and you're thinking, my God, like, is this really happening to me?
It's a living nightmare.
Because obviously everyone's poorly in the hospital, but when you see a baby come past, it's like, Jesus Christ, like that.
Yeah,
it's the hardest thing, right?
It's like a magnet to people's eyes.
Yeah, 100%. So that was really difficult. Ooh. And then you go up and, you know, you hand them over to the surgeon and they do their thing, and you're sat in agony in the holding room or whatever, and you know it's the longest X amount of time in your life. And then the pure elation that comes when they come back down and it's been successful. So she's come back down and it was successful. But what they'd done, they decided to scan her at the same time, if I remember rightly, and they gave her some fluid they wanted to see whether or not fluid could pass through her stomach at any point.
Yeah.
And so they gave her a lot of this dye when she went in for a scan. They didn't tell us the colour of the dye, and they didn't tell us there's a chance that she might sick it back up. So she's come back down from theatre, she's got the thingy line on, and obviously we're elated that she's back down, and you know, this is going to make things easier because she's got this line now and we can et cetera. And then she just started spraying out this red liquid.
When you said that, I thought the dye is going to be red, isn't it?
Yeah. And like,
they could have told you that.
Absolutely in panic, thinking, someone help. Obviously you're in the place where you want to be for somebody to help, and you know, you're looking around, someone help me, and then, oh, it's just a dye. And it's like, okay, brilliant.
Do you know what, I knew you were going to say
that.
I just knew. I did
tease it. I guess I know.
I mean, I'd have been throwing punches at that time.
Yeah, it's just
you would have done as well.
My wife is that. I'm quite calm and collected, and I'd like to think about everything theoretically. And
Ryan's not; he'll just smack you.
Yeah. I'll just bosh. I'll think about the consequences after.
But I mean, joking aside, that's
terrifying.
It was horrendous.
And that would look a horror film.
It was literally that. And that was. Because obviously she'd come back, she's a bit battered and bruised, and there's blood on her from the central line that was fitted and stuff like that. So we were starting to get into the depths of the traumatic things that were happening to us, to her, but that would affect us. So that had happened, and there was a couple of days where she leveled out slightly, and they were doing their test and they took a biopsy. We had to sign for her to go back up to theatre to have a biopsy taken. And we were taken under the oncology wing there then. because although they didn't know it was, well, they didn't know what it was.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So a tumour in the stomach is likely to be cancer. And so we would dread it here, and
yeah.
that it was cancer. We you know, we were thinking, our daughter can't have cancer. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
So yeah, we'd gone on to under the oncology, and again, it was a consultant, and she, again, in hindsight, she's a really nice lady, and I think she was doing her best for us, but she was quite cold and matter of fact, which I guess she needs to be. So they'd done the biopsy of it, and so that had gone off. That was working in the background. They were growing it in the lab or whatever they have to do. As this was happening, the fluid on her stomach was becoming a problem.
She
looked pregnant. It was really,
wow.
really
oh, gosh.
Veiny and fucking horrible. Mm. Really, really horrible. And
so nothing that could be, well, sorry, this is a dumb question, but I'm supposing there wasn't much that could be done about that.
So they said to us, she's going to die unless you let us fit a drain
right.
to the stomach. But we don't know if it's going to really work.
And because it's vascular as well. It's not like, from my limited knowledge of medical procedure, is because it's vascular, it's within the veins, the arteries and so forth. It's not like it's just your stomach filling up.
No, no.
So
and the fluid that she's
right, okay.
gaining in that area,
it's within,
needs to be there
yeah.
to a certain element. So yeah. it's like, if we fit this drain, we can't say for certain that she's going to be okay. And also it's going to be really difficult to monitor what's going out and what we need to replenish. Yeah. That was really, really scary. And obviously this is still COVID, guys. So I think at that point, only my mother and father-in-law and my mum had met her. And that was just kind of like, they were like, you bond with the people yeah, yeah. on the ward, right? And they were like, right, come in and go out. But at that point, they were like, if there's anyone that you want to meet her, now's probably a good time. And so if I remember rightly, Kath's sister had come. My family still live in London. So my dad lives in, away at that point, he lived in Qatar. Or was it? I know it might have been Dubai. That doesn't matter. But yeah. So.
They're next door to each other.
Yeah, it was somewhere in the Middle East. So yeah, they had come in and met her. And it was kind of like, we all thought maybe this was it. Mm. And I think, see, the more heads you get involved, the harder the decisions come. Because I think that Cass and mum had said, guys, I think we're pushing her, as in Aurora a little bit. And we were like, we like the odds here. Well, didn't like them, but we're going to go with them. So, yeah, we went into the room and we waited and the consultant came in and he said, like, things aren't fixed, but the drain is working.
Right.
And we'd gone in and it's almost like the relief on her face because the pressure had lifted
yeah,
and
yeah.
she wasn't needing the support breathing and stuff like that. We were like, oh my God, like, this feels amazing. Like, we're, for the first time, we feel like we're taking a step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's strange, right? Because you're literally draining fluid from her stomach every hour or whatever. And we're like, drain the fucking lot of it.
Yeah,
get it
yeah,
all
yeah.
out, but they can't because, like I said, they've got to monitor the levels, electrolytes, all the stuff that's going on within the body. Like, you can't just drain her of everything because...
But you know what he said makes absolute sense because yeah. I'm just trying to put myself in that situation and be like, you just
get it out.
Just fucking get it
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, yeah. Look how comfortable she is. Just get rid of it. Let's just fucking do it. But obviously, I'm not a doctor, and so that's not the right call to make. So that had happened and we were kind of regulating that, and she was in a comfortable setting. Still no real plan of action. We didn't know how we were moving forward.
So how many days old was Aurora around this point?
So she'd have been, this would have probably been like maybe the 20th of December. So 26-ish days,
right,
27 days.
Okay.
And obviously like 27 days, like, you're in love. Every single minute of every single day, I'm with her. I'm next to her. Like, we're holding her. We're learning about her. Like, and like, it's really strange, right? Because I had this real relation, like this, like a connection that I don't have with my other children, sadly.
Yeah.
And maybe because she had always known that this was the way it was going to go.
Can you put into words, if you can, what that
so it's,
that difference
it was like
is?
When I was in the room, like, and my wife will tell you this, like, her stats were just like level out a bit. Like it's almost like being around each other made the other one feel
amazing,
feel different, and it sounds a bit
just sensing,
I really wasn't like airy fairy before all of this, and I am a little bit now, but like it was just I don't know, airy like a connection that I can't describe. And I was really worried actually,
wow,
coming off the back of what had happened to Aurora, having more children, that I wouldn't be able to replicate it. And
but I think that the difference as well is subconsciously you're playing protector straight away in that situation, because it's a unique situation with her.
Yeah,
that you don't plan on having to experience again.
Yeah, and that's what I think, mate.
And I've been in neonatal units with my most recent daughter. She was 2 pounds 12 when she was born, and she was born at 32 weeks, and she was very, very poorly.
Yeah,
and I've always said actually, if we hadn't lost Lily, she would have died, as would Amy.
Yeah,
and there is a different type of connection there, because absolutely, you are playing protector straight away.
Yeah, yeah, it was a real, real strange one.
Wow.
So where are we now? So we're sat down. The drain's working. No plan. Consultant says, guys, can we go to the side room? So we go in there, and we're like, me and Kath, obviously, like, please don't let it be cancer, because we're bearing in mind we're staying in the cancer ward, so we're seeing poorly children with cancer, and you know, that's anybody whose child's seriously ill and they're spending a lot of time in hospital, like it must be so difficult to get up every day and face that. And so being around that, we were like, please do not let it be cancer. And we went in there and we sat in front of this lady, and she said, I wish it was cancer, because if it was, I would know how to treat it. But it's not. It's an intra-abdominal pericytoma.
Right.
And there's only ever been 20-ish cases of this in its location ever. And we're like, what the... So she's basically said, there's very little literature on this, so we kind of don't know where...
Ryan's looking at it now.
Intra-abdominal pericytoma. I think the pericytoma bit means vascular tumour.
That's a mad thing to hear. I wish it was, to put it into, because obviously
that was a real moment, and that's why it's so poignant, and it's just something I say, because it was a real moment for me, like how serious is this that somebody is wishing it's cancer? And so she said, look, I've done all of this research, I've consulted colleagues all over the world, and although there isn't any real proof that anything is going to work to do this, if we can potentially keep it at the size it is whilst Aurora grows, maybe there is a chance that she can outgrow it. So she recommended a course of chemotherapy based on what she had read. Although it was little, it was something to go off of. So so she said, are you happy for us to start some kind of chemotherapy? And we were like, I think in your head, I don't know if anyone's ever been around chemo, you think it's going to be this kind of really drastic, really scary, horrible moment where hair falls out and they feel sick straight away and their colour goes from their system. But really all it is administering a bit of liquid into whichever way they're taking it.
Yeah.
And I described it the other day as underwhelming, which sounds really wild to say, but we were kind of expecting it to be this big moment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
I think it's built up, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You think it's going to be like this massive moment in everything, and just two new nurses come down from the oncology ward and they administer it, and they went, and that was kind of it. The issue with that though was the tumour was still pressing on Aurora's liver, which is obviously something that's impacted quite badly when you have chemo, and she became very jaundiced, and then she started to become very poorly, not just as a result of the chemo, as if it was a wrong thing to do, which I'm not saying it was, but
some
it didn't
that,
help
some of everything
it
yeah.
didn't help yeah and so on the 24th of December they said, guys, she's more poorly than we can deal with, we're going to transfer you to Birmingham Children's tomorrow, obviously Christmas Day. We kind of set up for that slightly closer to home for us, which means a little bit more support. Obviously, it's still COVID, bearing in mind. So, the next night, the nurses made a real fuss of us. We had matching pajamas on and stuff like that. It was nice. And yeah, they geared us up the next day to travel down to Birmingham. And again, a really surreal moment about it all is they said to us, we've got to set off 30, 40 minutes before you can leave. Because if you're behind us and we pull over for whatever reason, it's not going to be good that you're there. So,
wow.
Yeah. Oh,
I hadn't thought of that.
I know. And there's so many little things that you don't, that we experienced that you just, you're not aware of, and two, would never think about.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess why would you?
So we set off behind Aurora. She's gone down there, little tiny, tiny, tiny baby in this like, looks like a spaceship pod thing, gone down. Mm-hmm. Again, the staff that took her, like, they filled us full of confidence, you know, that she'll be fine, we've got her, blah, 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 blah. Christmas, with it being Christmas Day, we stopped past Cass' parents on the way, because at this point we'd been living in hospitals for a month. Pretty much, so we look like shit. our clothes are worn and tatty, and it's Christmas Day. And then from there, obviously, we move forward to Birmingham, and it was stark. It was ridiculous, really, what happened there, because when we arrived, we'd been in a neonatal unit where we had one-on-one care. We arrived there, she's on a ward.
Yeah, it's a busy place, isn't it? Birmingham children,
two beds next to each other. She's no longer in the incubator. She's in a bed, and she's got one nurse who's got four or five people. We've turned up there. Her nappy's wet. When you're on chemo, your wee becomes really acidic. So she'd had a sore bum. Kath went off her fucking head.
Yeah,
she was like, "What?" Obviously, we've just come from having like. We're here because she's poorer.
Yeah.
So why is there less care?
Why have you brought her here?
But obviously, when you go to Birmingham Children's, you have to do really well to be the most poorly child there. Do you know what I mean? So it's different levels to.
Do you know what? That's a really level-headed way of putting it, because in such an emotionally charged situation, but exactly what you just said. Because the amount of sick children in that place,
really,
it's a
really
big poorly
kids. Yeah. So we went there, and it gets worse. They said, oh, no, you can't both be here.
What?
And we were like, what? It's Christmas Day. Like, what do you mean we can't both be here? Okay, you can't both be here, but you can have like 4 hours.
Oh, cheers.
And we were like,
what? Together or
yeah,
each?
Because COVID, if we remember right, didn't affect people if you wore a mask or if you were in your little area. You go for a restaurant, you'd have to wear a mask to your table. But when you got to your table, it was all right, you could take it off because you're in a force field there.
Oh, honestly, guys, this is fucking horrendous. So we decided that I would stay because we did. And I would stay the night with Anne, one of the fold-out chairs that live next to the beds. And it was a horrendous night because the girl next to us...
This is on Christmas night?
This is Christmas night. I had my Christmas dinner in a lunchbox, which Cass parent had brought. And yeah, it was a horrendous night because the girl next to us, she had liver problems because we were on a liver ward. And we connected with the mother. She's the little girl's had a second... had a liver transplant and is now really fit and healthy. But that night, she was screaming all night. It was a really hard night. But to top it off and to make it worse, Kath jumped in our car with her mum to drive back to Coventry and broke down. Run out of fuel. And her old man is a typical 60-odd-year-old bricklayer in a van who doesn't know how to use any device that would take him to her. So they're at the side of the road somewhere in Birmingham trying to get refilled by him. And, you know, like you literally couldn't write it. Christmas Day, we've just been separated from our daughter. Like, we've been transferred to Birmingham Children's Hospital. Calf's broken down on the side of the motorway.
Mm. It's like when it rains, it pours.
Well, right? So, someone else also hacked into our Nando's account the week before and spent like 300 quid in London on Nando's. Like, we were just like...
I suppose you can easily spend 300 quid in London on Nando's.
Loads of different restaurants.
That's a starter.
That's just half a chicken in two sides.
Yeah, that's a starter.
I was going to say, that's just the delivery fee.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, we're like, wow. You know, when you're like, oh my God, so. We've obviously landed.
Sorry, I do, and just to try and put it's horrible, but put a little bit of light in the situation. After all of that, you still remember about the fact that someone fleeced your Nando's account.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I know that we're going to get onto it, but like, no wonder you kind of run so much after the shit you've been through. Yeah. Fucking hell, you need to run.
I know.
To break down everything in your head.
My tag on the page that I've got is like, we're all running from or towards something.
Absolutely.
Something's coming that it will benefit you to be in a good physical, mental position to undertake.
Well, yeah,
or
let's...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Or you something has happened to you and you need that running, you need that mental resilience in order to survive it.
How long did you have, was Aurora at Birmingham Children's?
So we landed there. At this point, we still hadn't really shared that she was that poorly. Mm. And on social media, it was just her face. And obviously, they were then trying to come up with a plan. And on New Year's Eve, they had brought in the top surgeon / consultant in the UK in...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he'd come in off of his leave. And he said to us, there's nothing really I can do. If you want me to operate, she will die on the table. And I don't want to do that. Mm. And I don't think we should do that. If you want, I can take you to the scan just to show you just how big a thing this is, which I obviously said yes to. And I saw it and I was like, oh my God, like it's literally like the size of a fist in a little tiny girl. But at that point, obviously, we've gone into that room. They've told us that. And we are like, no. Like this. I just remember it being freezing. I mean, it was cold anyway because it was January. But I just remember it being absolutely freezing. Kath had been given a blanket in this room. And yeah, he'd said that to us. And the next day we woke up and we were like, nah, not to us. This isn't happening. And so we then put to social media, guys, somebody in the world must know something about this. And there was a bit of a flurry, people in America, Italy, all talking to us, what about this? Bearing in mind, we've got one of the best, he's called Professor Morland, one of the best like professors, whatever, in his field, tending to us. Like he knows like what's going on here. But he allowed us to try at least. And again, a lot of this kind of stuff comes in reflection. It's because... how could you live with yourself if you didn't?
He was
doing it for us, right? Not for her. He was under no illusion that it was going to get better for her, and obviously he was right. But we did try a couple of things, and
it's nice that he did just from a mental, I think,
from a human just, perspective.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the empathetic and compassionate side of somebody, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Which actually, we've always said with consultants, professors, and you've alluded yourself, a lot of the time it is very plain, very cold, very straight to the point. But
to be fair, I had to break character with him. I remember he came in because at this point I'd been taking in the data and like formulating everything and saying, right, this is our options, this is our plan, blah, blah, blah. Kath's obviously on side, like running off emotion and this, And he'd come in and he just fucking took the piss. Like he really spoke to us. I said to him, do you know this is my fucking daughter?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Fair play.
Yeah, do you know, like, I'm not being funny. I've sat here now and I've bit my tongue, but have a little decorum around us. Like this is the most precious thing in the world to us.
Yeah.
Have a bit of respect. And that's when things
change.
Sometimes you need to do that in life, don't
I'm
you?
So I'm not that person, but like I had to do that for Kath and I.
But there becomes a point. I mean, you've been so at this point, you're a month down the line.
Yeah, almost 2 months. Yeah,
almost 2 months down the line. There's only so much you can take before you're going to blow.
And that is absolutely it.
We say with our clients, don't we, that you know, if you keep filling that cup, eventually it spills over. You've got to let something out somewhere. 100%. And then, like you say, you've come out of character and that's your moment, and that takes you back slightly to be able to then, right, your cup's going to be filled again.
Oh, just step back a bit. So we were doing the one-on-one off with Kath, like 4 hours on, 4 hours off by the bedside. And she's literally getting rushed past Kath in the corridor to go to like intensive care. And like Kath sat there, she can't come with her. And then obviously every round that comes around with the consultants, you have to regurgitate what's been said to you. And it's a lot to take in on your own. And it's quite like numbing. So literally got to the point.
It's relentless, isn't it?
Relentless. Got to the point where Kath was like, we need to be in here together. And I don't condone tricking the system. However, she called up her GP and said, look, I am literally going to kill myself if you do not let us be in there together. Do what you need to do. Write what you need to write. We're in there together.
Yeah.
And we moved into the room that we had.
That ain't tricking the system. That's being a parent.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's being a parent. Yeah. That's not tricking the system.
I mean, look, it's desperate times. Yeah. You do what you have to do.
That's doing whatever you will do for your child at that time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, there is no rules at this point.
How would you feel if you hadn't have done, or if she hadn't have gone down
and
that route?
And a lot of the time I say to Kath, like, I'm so grateful for the fight that you had in those moments to get us that, because I think it was 8 days of split. Because I did a post where I'd worked it out what I had been robbed of my daughter's life, down to the lies that were given by the government. I mean, at this time, now we found out Matt Hancock and that were having a party at number 10. This was all going on the same time that I was not allowed to be by my bedside, by my wife's side. It was tough. But we then kind of moved into this room, and Kath and I said, we'd like to take over her treatment, essentially. And we administered all of her medicine. We pretty much did everything for her. And that gave us a real sense of, like, that was mum and dad time.
Your parenting.
You
had time to nurture. It wasn't the way you wanted to do it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd prefer to give her a bottle, but if I need to, drain her or whatever, that's what we did. We had that flurry, and then I'd said to Kath, and this goes back to when you said, like, were you kind of harmonious in your decisions? And Kath, I had looked at the data and realised that this wasn't going to be the outcome that we both wanted. And I'd realised that before Kath had. And I just said to her, like, look, if at any point Aurora gives me any signs that she's had enough here, then, you know, as her dad, I'm going to make the right decision, whether it hurts or not. And they're just... It just, her heartbeat had just started being really erratic, and she was getting poorly, and we could see it. And her heartbeat would just drop. And I just said to Kath, like, is this enough now? Like, it had been going on for 3 or 4 days. I said, like, is this enough? Can we end this? This isn't right. We're keeping her alive for our sake, not hers. This is no quality of life for her. And so on the 28th of January, everything was set up at Kath's parents' house, and It was a really bizarre moment. We were in the back of the... Because obviously everyone you're interacting with knows what you're going home for, right? We decided to go back on the 28th, and the palliative care team, amazing team, met us there. The house had been prepared to keep her comfortable and to have everything that we needed there. We had invited people around. Anybody want to come and see her? Obviously we know what's happening. I think we thought we would have a week, maybe. On the 31st of Jan, I had this, again, a really weird, not that we ever slept that whole 2 months, really. We didn't really sleep, but I was led down trying to sleep, let's say, and about 5 o'clock in the morning, we'd brought the mattress downstairs. We're in the front room because that's where all the equipment was to keep her stable. I'd woke up and I just woke up for no reason, and I looked down at her between me and Kath, and her heart rate was starting to slow, and I realised what was happening. And I picked her up and I gave her a cuddle and I said, it's okay, you know, just dad's here. And I just had about 20-30 minutes, just me and her, just probably chatting waffle, probably embarrassing her if she was still here now. She'd be like, well, what were you talking about? And then I woke Kath up, and we sat on the sofa next to each other and held her. And everything was just slowing down, and I looked her in the eyes and I said, you don't need to fight anymore, dad's here, and I'll look after you. It was really, 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 really bizarre. Like, I wouldn't have liked it to happen any other way. It was going to happen, right? In my arms, in a place where we're safe, next to Kath, you know.
You're in control of that situation.
And when you go home, they don't tell you how it's going to happen. No. It can happen a multitude of ways. And for her to just slowly pass like that was probably the best outcome it could have been. It was a really, really, really weird, beautiful moment.
Bittersweet, is that?
It was just like horrendous.
Yeah.
But beautiful. Yeah. Like, I've been to Afghan, Iraq, like, I've been around death, you know, older people dying, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But like, that moment, it was, I think I had a complete, it just made me realise, like, the fragility of life, the importance of life, and I don't know, just felt feelings that I'd never felt before. And it still haunts me now, that particular moment. I can be driving and I just think about it, and I think about the words that I said, and I think about her eyes and that last breath, and it crushes me. But the overhaul of emotion that I feel when I think about it is a core memory to my relationship with her. It's the feeling of my heart's broke. I feel like I've died myself. Like, that is proof of the love and the feeling and the relationship that we had. And if I have to feel it every single time that I say it, then I will. Do you know what I mean? So she'd passed away, and then this is there on in is some really strange things again. So obviously we have to call the palliative care consultant. She comes around, she has to listen to her chest for what feels like an eternity just to make sure that she has passed away. My in-laws live around the corner from the undertaker, so it would have been discussed that we would be able to take her over there in a pushchair. But I don't know if you guys are aware, you can keep your child home for a couple of days having passed. So they brought in a cold mattress and we laid in our bed with her in the next to me crib for a few hours, numb, silent, hand on her, just to feel that. And even more bizarre, we'd never taken her for a walk. So we wrapped her up, put a hat on, took her out onto the canal, took her for a walk. People are going about their day. Yeah. We're just two young people, a man and a woman, early 30s, late 20s, pushing a pram, middle of the day. Obviously, we're like fucking zombies.
They're probably smiling at you.
Smiling at us, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm grateful that no one kind of tried to look in, like old people usually do.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be fair, she looked so peaceful that you probably still... She looked a bit jaundiced,
yeah.
But she looked absolutely perfect. And she had had breathing PAPs on for pretty much her whole life. So it was the first time that we'd really seen her pure
in a
the way intended.
Yeah, and oh my God, she's fucking absolutely gorgeous. Really, really, really beautiful. And yeah, so we were like walking up and down the canal and it's just like, did that really happen? Did we really walk our dead daughter up and down the canal like in the middle of the day and people were, all right, like how bizarre. And then obviously you go into the planning of the funeral and writing a eulogy, and it's COVID, so who's can come, who's going to watch it on the stream, you know, like those kind of things. There's another thing that gets me. I remember when she passed away, I'd called my friends, and the way that I said it is that she's gone. And every now and then my wife will say, when our daughter goes to sleep, like, oh, she's gone. And it just fucking hits me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hits me. And because I just remember the conversations with my best mate.
It's symbolic, isn't it?
Yeah. And really, really hard time. And thereafter, it was just a blur. It was just a massive blur, to be honest. The funeral was something to plan for, something to do. You still got something to do. Once that had passed, I went into a really dark place.
As a last bit before we wrap up this episode then, to drop that little tease, what is, just in a nutshell, if you were to give it a headline, what your challenge is that you're about to embark on, what is it?
It's an emotional pilgrimage.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
Is that enough?
I love that.
Sounds like an album title as well.
I know, yeah.
That sounds like an album.
Ace and Jordan Black, The Emotional Pilgrimage.
Piss off, Taylor Swift. You're not having that. Emotional pilgrimage.
It's an emotional pilgrimage. It's going to be as equally as hard mentally for me.
Yeah.
Mentally and emotionally as it will be physically.
So on that note, we will leave it there and be back with our next part, and we'll get stuck into this even more. But I would just like to say, Jordan Black, absolutely phenomenal guest.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't really want to sit here and listen to you talk about the worst period of your life, but that's how engaging you made it, and the way that you explained everything. So much love to you and Kath. And I think you two are perfect for maybe a future. We're doing like a couples mini series.
Really, yeah. I'd love to get Kath in. Kath doesn't really get involved in as much of this kind of stuff as me. Yeah. Obviously, I've got the page and stuff that.
Yeah.
But she tells the whole thing from a completely different perspective.
Well,
And
well, we'll do that. We've got a little mini game called Cup Half Full or Cup Half Empty.
Can we do it before she hears anything that I've said about her? Because but no, honestly, it's been a pleasure. I wish I wasn't part of the group of men that mean that I have to come on here. But what you guys are doing and what you're spreading and how you're opening up for other men to be able to speak so openly is really admirable. And I respect you both a lot and yourself for coming on and the angle that you bring.
But also, don't just think it's us, because the fact that you've come in and that you're sharing your story and you're talking about that as well is... You probably don't realise how much your episodes are going to go out and help other people at the same time.
This is
so you're helping us help other people. Yeah. So
this is help me help you.
Exactly that.
We'll put all details on how you can get in touch with Jordan in the description for this, and you can, or if you're already listening in the future, you might even be able to click on the second part right now. Take care. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Globals. Make some noise, Jordan. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.